Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever you are. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this medical education activity podcast. My name is Florian Wagenlehner. I'm director of the Clinic of Urology, Pediatric Urology and Andrology at the Justus Liebig University in Gießen, Germany. And this is GlaxoSmithKline organized and funded medical education activity. Note, please, that not all medicines and or indications presented in this podcast may be approved for use in all countries. Please contact your GSK medical advisor if you have any questions. This medical education activity is intended for healthcare professionals only. So this medical education activity centers around the challenges of diagnosis and the management of resistant pathogens causing urinary tract infections and recurrent urinary tract infections. As you know, antimicrobial resistance is a pandemic of its own, and we will have several parameters and items in this podcast today. With me are two experts on urinary tract infections, Dr. Deborah Frommer and Professor Vic Kuller. I will introduce the experts. Dr. Deborah Frommer is associate professor at the Department of Urology, Hackensack University of the United States. She's chief female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery, and her research interest is antibiotic stewardship and multi-resistant pathogens, amongst many other topics. Professor Vic Kuller is professor of urogynecology of the Department of Urogynecology, St. Mary's Hospital of Imperial College London, United Kingdom. And amongst his interest is recurrent urinary tract infections, as well as the topics of immunity of the bladder in the frame of urinary tract infections. So it's a great pleasure to have you both with me today in this podcast. So maybe this first question goes to Deborah. Deborah, when and why did you become interested in the treatment of patients with urinary tract infections?
Hi there, Florian. First of all, thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be talking about this with you guys. I became interested in treating UTI by necessity. It was the sheer volume of patients, particularly women, that were seeking help with this condition that was at times debilitating and very distressing to women. And it just struck me as odd that we know so little about UTIs and prevention of UTIs, how we treat UTIs, in terms of a lack of research and a fund of knowledge that we seem to have more in other with other disease processes. And so I found it interesting simply because of the challenge and the sheer numbers.
As you are working in pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery, you are certainly seeing very hard to treat women. Is that something that boosted your interest in the recent years when you became specialized in this area?
Well, I've been specialized in this area for quite some time. And, you know, I'm a referral center for lots of gynecologists and urologists who kind of are at the end with what they can do for patients. So I usually don't see the simple patient who is having their first UTI in their life. You know, I'm seeing patients that are definitely more complicated and more challenging.
Thank you. Professor Vic Kuller, when and why did you become interested in the treatment of patients with urinary tract infections and recurrent urinary tract infections?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for asking me to speak. And it's great to have a discussion about this. Certainly, my interest started in the early 90s when I initially did research in this area. And what struck me was the impact that infections have on patients. it's not just the change in terms of symptoms and the way that they modify patients' lives and their impact on their quality of life, but importantly, it's also the degree of pain, the worry and anxiety which patients suffer when the possibility of infection comes out of the blue, and then accessing treatment becomes very difficult. And this also, because it is so common, you know, we must remember before antibiotics, really in the 1930s, when Haas, who defined the original 100,000 culture forming units per mil cutoff, he actually writes from, he was a Harvard nephrologist, and he actually wrote about how 50% of mortality was due to patients not receiving treatment because there was no treatment prior to antibiotics. So it's something which has had a large impact on the, we would say the a large substantial proportion of the population. It is something which affects all stages of life, and we're seeing more and more urinary tract infections in the elderly. And it's something which we can really change people's quality of life. And that makes it very interesting. And also the interaction between bowel dysfunction, bladder dysfunction, we're at a very interesting point of looking at lower urinary tract infections.
Thank you. Very interesting. Now, I come back to Deborah. Deborah, you said that you're quite a while in this subspecialization. Now, has the number of patients you see with antibiotic-resistant pathogens increased since you started in clinical practice?
Oh, this is absolutely true. By far, we are referring more and more patients for parenteral antibiotics due to resistant pathogens. And certainly over the last 10 years, we've looked at our own data and have seen increasing numbers of resistance to particular antibiotics, oral antibiotics, namely. And it's just becoming an increasing problem. We're certainly keeping our infusion center very busy.
So it's definitely an increase in difficult to treat patients. Vic, you are since the 90s professor of urogynecology. How has that changed in your area as you are in the UK and Deborah in the US? Is that something that is only restricted to countries, or is this we see all over the world?
Yeah, we've certainly seen antimicrobial resistance change over the years. Partly, it may well relate to prescribing practice, but very importantly, part of it is driven by the doctor's access to investigations, and whether the patient will ultimately be able to access an investigation before needing treatment. So this conflict is there, but certainly in terms of seeing antibiotic resistant pathogens, we see different levels of resistance in different parts of the country. So locally, we find in North London, which has a population of around 6 million, we will see a different rate of resistant organisms from South London, which will have 6 million as well. So completely different, not more than 7 miles or 10 kilometers apart, and yet completely different resistance patterns. And so we are seeing more antibiotic resistant pathogens.
If you say prescribing practice, can you allude to that a little more? What you mean is that that we have the necessity, or we think we have the necessity, to prescribe more and more broad spectrum and last resort antibiotics due to the increasing antimicrobial resistance?
This is as much to do with knowing the local antimicrobial patterns of resistance. So, for example, for us, it's very common to see E. coli's which are resistant to amoxicillin. It does appear to be different in different areas. So it is important, I think, as a physician to firstly know the patterns of antimicrobial resistance, which you can normally obtain from the local microbiology department. And this can then advise you, if you do need to prescribe without having the culture results, what is the best option for the first line treatment.
Very important. That brings me back to Deborah. Now, if you have a patient with a suspected antimicrobial resistant urinary tract infection, in order not to use always the last resort antibiotic, how does that change your clinical practice to have an optimal management of this patient?
Right. So I see this as two goals. Number one, we want prevention. Prevention in the form of a variety of supplements that we can give, like a cranberry supplement, D-mannose, probiotics. We put people on methenamine and vitamin C at times, and avoiding antibiotic prophylaxis. The second goal is to minimize the utilization of antibiotics for active treatment. So if patients are mildly symptomatic from their UTI, but they're not significantly bothered, even though their culture is positive, we try to hold off as long as possible on antibiotic therapy and just give them supportive methods for managing their symptoms.
Thank you. That's very important. So symptoms are important to you. So that is one of the first questions you will ask them.
Oh, absolutely. Now, it gets a little complicated when you have patients that might be mildly symptomatic, but have a history of urosepsis, right? Because then people get concerned and they often want to treat before a patient becomes uroseptic if they have had repeated admissions to the hospital for urosepsis. So it does get a little tricky, but the vast majority of patients do not go on to develop urosepsis. So observing these patients in the outpatient setting until their symptoms become intolerable is generally the way we manage these people to kind of mitigate the resistance.
Thank you. Wick, you mentioned that even in the different regions in London, you have different ratios or rates of antimicrobial resistance. Now, how does your clinical practice change if you have a patient with a suspected antimicrobial resistant UTI?
I think it does depend on assessing the patient. If you have a patient who's on immunosuppressives or is a renal transplant patient, because of its impact on the function of their, for example, kidneys or the risks of developing sepsis, we would probably have a different approach. We also really want to know what is the organism. We would have a very different view of an enterococcus compared with a E. coli infection. But usually you can be guided by the symptoms of the patient. And I agree with Deborah, you know, one of the key issues is where a patient who has no symptoms and an organism has been found. One of the key features of developing recurrent urinary tract infection is where that patient is then treated with a broad spectrum organism. And there seems to be interesting data about treatments which affect the gut microbiome seem to lead to more recurrent urinary tract infections, where antibiotic treatments which specifically target the urinary tract and do not cause gastrointestinal upset seem to lead to less in the way of recurrent urinary tract infections. And I think the other thing to bear in mind is if a patient has constipation, they will have a 20% increased chance of recurrent urinary tract infections. And even having diarrhea, that's got a 10% chance of increasing recurrent urinary tract infections. And in women, the risks of urinary tract infection are increased tenfold with sexual intercourse and using methods such as passing your emptying the bladder after intercourse, or taking D-mannose or cranberry supplements around the time of intercourse may also reduce that risk. And then lastly, looking at patients who have, for example, diabetes. Is the diabetes well controlled? What other techniques should be used to reduce the risks of urinary tract infection, which are maybe medical and not necessarily directed towards the organism?
Thank you. And Vic, how would you inform a patient if you think they are at risk of antimicrobial resistance? When would you treat them empirically? And if yes, what advice would you give them?
I think this involves discussion with the patient. Certainly the patient who has had multiple recurrent urinary tract infections, that they have in the past had organisms with antimicrobial resistance, to actually discuss the level of symptoms, informing them about the risks of treating without a culture. And then a proper discussion can occur with the patient about, would it be better to wait for a culture result? Because often these patients will be very nervous. They've had past experiences which are bad, and they want treatment because they are worried about the possibility of the infection becoming worse. But often with discussion, a middle way can be found, and also trying to avoid those broad spectrum antibiotics, which alter the gut flora and then lead to antimicrobial resistance.
Great. Deborah, would you do that differently in your practice?
No, I would absolutely agree with that. I think it's very important to inform patients because they're not always aware that the utilization of antibiotics inappropriately can cause such collateral damage. And I think that that's very important to make clear to patients so that they understand we're not making them live with these symptoms just for fun. This is because we're trying to minimize the utilization of antibiotics that may be inappropriate and waiting for a culture. And so most of the patients in my practice understand this. Some of them don't, but most of them do. And I think that that understanding is critical for them to be able to follow along with this practice pattern.
Thank you. But it takes time to explain them. So, Deborah, from your perspective, what future developments would improve the management of uncomplicated urinary tract infections for the patients you see, for the patients you treat?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see scientific developments. I know in Europe, you guys may have started using a vaccine, or certainly trials have come out with utilization of a vaccine, speaking to the host immunology aspect of it. And I think that that's going to be a critical part of research. I know that there are companies that are looking into bacteriophage therapy for the treatment of UTIs, which is a novel way of treating this. Of course, the push for novel antibiotics and new classes of antibiotics could be very helpful, particularly in patients who not only have resistance, but who also have allergy. So, you know, antibiotic allergies, which limits the use of our oral antibiotics. And so I think that the future is dependent upon the research and innovation, and hopefully we'll get there.
Thank you. Vic, two words. What's your perspective on future developments?
Wow. Well, I think the future is bright. Certainly, we have been using these sublingual sprays such as Urimmune for preventing urinary tract infections, and they do not appear to produce side effects, but at the same time they have a high rate of efficacy. Things which are certainly going to be important in the future are fecal transplants. Certainly, there's some early data in our institution of patients who have antimicrobial resistance mainly our renal transplant patients, and we find with fecal transplants that 24 out of 26 actually stop getting recurrent urinary tract infections. So the gut microbiome seems to be a key area for us to investigate to find a better way of treating these patients, and may well be a way of stopping recurrent urinary tract infections.
Thank you very much. I will take this last word. The future is bright. This is always a good closing. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have enjoyed this podcast on urinary tract infection and best management of them, as well as recurrent urinary tract infections. And I wish you a nice evening, a nice afternoon, or a nice morning, wherever you are. And we recorded this podcast now in December. And if you listen to that, I also wish you a Merry Christmas. Thank you very much, all in the names of Deborah Frommer and Professor Kuller.